What are you doing in here?
Looking at the truth of us, she wanted to say. Just taking a look at the plans for Haverhall, she managed, and the steadiness of her voice surprised her, because if there was ever a time that she might wish to act like a hysterical, weepy female, now would be it. Imagine my surprise to discover that you are the owner of a school. She heard his boots on the floor as he crossed the room, though she didn't turn around. I received your summons, she continued. Was it this that you wanted me to see?
No.
What does your sister think of these plans? He came to a stop behind her.
Anne doesn't know.
Ah. You really are good at subterfuge, Your Grace. Have you considered a career as a spy? The Navy, I'm sure, would be happy to have you.
Clara.
Does anyone know? Not that it mattered, really. Eventually everyone would. Legacies died. Priorities shifted and progress ruled. The rational part of her knew that if August hadn't bought this land, it would have been bought by another, who would have eventually seen what August had. But another hadn't kissed her on a stone fence with a sunset at their backs. Another hadn't danced with her in a studio before he made love to her. Another hadn't made her believe that she might have what she had long ago thought lost to her. She became aware that August had moved and was now standing in front of the desk beside her, staring down at the drawings.
You weren't meant to see these,
he said. Why not? She would not cry. They are remarkable.
I had these ordered long before us.
Us? Clara made a rude noise, unable to help herself. There was no us, Your Grace. There was, however, what you would probably call unexpected benefits from good business.
No,
he said it harshly.
The idea of Haverhall's potential came up long before I... before we...
He stopped.
What happened with us, what we are, what we have become, has nothing to do with any of this.
Clara blew out a shaky breath. I think I've already heard that line before. She needed to leave, get out of here, away from him, and recover her composure before she did or said something that she would regret. That she wouldn't be able to find an excuse for. Because they hadn't become anything. Not anything lasting anyway, which was exactly what could be said for her school. All good things must come to an end at some point, and this was simply one of them. When will you start? She asked, still feeling numb. Developing the land.
I don't know,
he said.
I don't know if I... Not until you...
Until I what? Find a position as a governess in a wealthy house? She flinched, knowing she sounded bitter and petty, and she was better than that. That's why you gave me a year's grace. Isn't it?
A governess.
August made a rude noise.
You are a brilliant teacher, Clara. There are many schools that would be lucky to have you,
he growled.
Your brother has somehow managed to set Strathmore shipping to rights with no help from me. The fortune that your father lost will soon be recovered and then some. You will be able to do anything.
He was right. She knew. Even if it felt like a betrayal now, she needed to keep it in perspective. She needed to think like August. Needed to believe that it was an opportunity, not a loss. The only loss here was that of her heart. I wish you had told me about this, she whispered.
I tried,
he said.
I tried to tell you.
For a man known for his ruthlessness and determination. You didn't try very hard then.
I couldn't.
Why?
Why?
He raked a hand through his hair.
Because then you would have looked at me the way you're looking at me right now. I would have been only the man who had stolen your legacy from you.
Perhaps, Clara said sadly. But I would like to think I would have respected you for it. I would have liked to have believed that you trusted me. That you believed in me enough to know that I would have understood why you were doing what you did.
Yet you wouldn't trust me with the truth,
he said quietly.
You didn't trust me enough to ask for help.
I suppose I didn't, Clara whispered sadly. And now I can't say that I was wrong. I thought that I might have been worth at least something, that we were worth at least something. But you've made it very clear that you will never put anyone before your need to have more.
That's not true, Clara. I don't want to lose you,
he said. You can't lose something that you never had. I am not something else to be acquired.
Clara, I want us to...
There isn't an us, August. Us implies that we would have faced the difficult things together the same as we would have faced the things that were easy. There was a you, doing what you thought was right for yourself and your family. And there was a me, who did what I thought was right for my family. Clara took a shuddering breath and rolled the drawings up neatly. She stared down at them for a minute before she turned. I wish you well, August. I know that this will be beautiful when it's done. He was looking at her, those intense blue eyes conflicted.
Don't go. Not like this.
Goodbye, Your Grace, Clara said, hanging on to her composure by the tiniest of threads. And then she fled. Chapter 21. Hours later, it was Rose who found Clara in her office, staring miserably out the window at Haverhall's gardens, watching the first leaves fall and litter the ground. There you are, Rose said, coming in and flopping herself down on one of the chairs in a most unladylike manner. Her hands were still stained with paint, and the apron she wore to cover her skirts was similarly streaked. I was watching for you, but I must have missed you coming back. Did you go to see Holloway?
I did.
And? Rose asked, leaning forward. What did you think of his idea? Clara felt her jaw slacken, another spear of betrayal stabbing at her. Jesus, Rose! You knew? Confusion spread over Rose's delicate features. Knew what? About his plans. For Haverhall. It was bad enough Holloway had kept it from her, but Rose had too. What the hell are you talking about? Her sister demanded. You're not making any sense. Clara scrubbed at her eyes with her hands. So Rose didn't know. It should have made her feel better, but all she felt was empty. The Duke of Holloway bought Haverhall. Rose sat back with a thump. She was silent for a moment, and Clara couldn't quite determine what she was thinking based on her expression. I see, she finally said. I see. That's all you have to say. Clara was aware her voice had risen, but she didn't care. He had architects draw up development plans for Haverhall months ago. What do you want me to say? Rose asked. I'm still saddened that we... that you had to sell it. I'm not surprised Holloway or someone with his sort of vision bought it. But it helped save our family. Clara did not need Rose's practicality and logic now. He lied, Clara spit. About what? about why he was in Dover. Rose considered her for an unnerving moment.
I don't think so.
Clara stared at her.
You're defending him. You hate him, Rose, the Duke of Doxies and all that, remember?
Rose winced slightly.
I might have been a little hasty in judgment.
Clara gaped at her.
What? I don't hate him, especially since my sister is in love with him.
I'm not in love with him.
She didn't want to be in love with him. She could not be in love with him. Not after what he'd done.
You're a terrible liar. That is why you're so upset right now, not that he bought Haverhall, but because he bought it without telling you.
No,
Clara was shaking her head, anger and hurt boiling through her.
You were right about him, Rose, from the beginning. I was such a fool. He told me what I wanted to hear. He pretended to listen, pretended to agree with me, made me think he might respect me.
Stop!
Rose brought her hand down on the desk with a smack. Clara jumped and, with horror, realized that there were tears running down her cheeks.
Just stop,
Rose said, a little more gently this time.
You're wrong. The Duke may have bought Haverhall, and yes, maybe he should have told you. But the rest? You're wrong about him.
She sighed.
I don't know how he feels about you, though I think I have a good idea. But I know he listened, Clara. Very carefully. And he respects you very much.
Clara wiped angrily at her eyes.
What August Faulkner respects is money. For him, there will never be enough, and there is no room in his life for anything that is not cold-blooded ambition. I was simply a means to an end. Clara, no, let me finish. I have no one to blame except myself. So if I'm upset, it is because I had delusions that I could change his priorities. Yet I knew who August Faulkner was. I knew where he came from and what drove him. People don't change.
No, I don't suppose they do.
Rose was examining the streaks of blue and red staining her fingers.
You're not making me feel better,
Clara mumbled.
You're supposed to be on my side here.
Oh, I am.
Rose reached behind her neck and untied her apron, then passed it to Clara.
Dry your eyes.
There's something you need to see. The building sat on the very southern edge of London, where the tentacles of the city hadn't yet engulfed the countryside completely. The structure was solid and wide, 3 stories tall, and had the straight, clean lines that could be found in London only in new construction. It wasn't fancy by any stretch of the imagination. The walls a nondescript stone, the roof a dark slate, the wide front door painted an equally dark grey. Plain, buff-coloured curtains hung in the rows of windows that lined each story at regular intervals, fluttering gently where a pane had been opened to allow in the autumn air. A huge chimney ran up the east side, and a kitchen garden sprawled away from the side door. The backs of women and the occasional youth bent over garden tools and baskets visible in the still lush greenery. On the southwest side, poles had been driven into the ground and clotheslines strung up between them, an array of sheets and petticoats flapping in the sunshine. A handful of women were pulling dry clothes down and replacing them with wet garments, and Clara could hear their faint chatter. Behind the main building, a second structure sat, even more plain than the first, but with large, long windows. It put Clara in mind of a small warehouse, the likeness, heightened by the wagon sitting in front of it, loaded with long-wrapped bales of what looked like fabric. "What is this place?" she asked as she and Rose stood on the short, wide drive. Her sister remained silent. Clara narrowed her eyes as a group of children, the oldest, not more than 6 or 7, ran through the maze of drying sheets toward a knotted rope tied to a low branch of a massive oak just beyond. "An inn?" she ventured. "Sort of. A boarding house. Sort of. How many guesses do I get before you save me from myself?" Rose studied the toe of her boot, not even cracking a smile. Clara turned her attention back to the scene before her, noticing for the first time that there seemed to be only women and children present. "There are no men here." "No." She blew out an exasperated breath. "No hints? A convent, then? Holloway's concubines and their offspring?" Rose looked over at her, a strange expression on her face. "No. You don't really think..." "Well, of course not, Rose. But I'm out of ideas." "This place is..." Rose looked as if she was searching for the right words. "This place is what?" "Is Anne's birthday present." Clara blinked. "I beg your pardon?" "This place. It's called Brookside, and the Duke of Holloway plans to give it to Anne for her 19th birthday in a fortnight. The buildings, the land, and the responsibility of managing it." "And what is it, exactly?" Clara asked quietly, a strange sensation starting to rise through her chest. "It's a home. For families whose fathers or husbands are in debtor's prison. It's a safe place for women and children to live until their circumstances change." The world suddenly seemed to have become muffled, as if it had faded around her sister and her words. Clara's throat thickened and the backs of her eyes burned. "The Duke built it 5 years ago, Rose said quietly and deliberately. "The children have chores, and they are expected to work in the garden, and the chicken coops, and the goat sheds. But they learn reading and arithmetic here, too. The women who live here are responsible for the upkeep. Those who do not work in the house work out back." "Out back?" Clara managed. Rose gestured to the large building at the rear. "They weave. Holloway imports raw product from India, and it's processed and woven here into book muslins, checked, striped, and sprigged muslins. He can, of course, sell those faster than he can have them made, and at a very competitive price, and for a very tidy profit. He's also invested in and purchased some new loom technology that he believes will change the way cloth is produced, and the women and girls here are quick learners. He told me that foresight will only benefit his bottom line in 10 years' time." Rose said it wryly, and Clara could almost hear the words coming from August himself. They would be defensive, as though he had to justify his actions. "Oh." Clara was searching for words that would express what she was feeling right now. Admiration was too weak. Approval too inadequate. "It's not a charity," Rose continued. "No one lives here for free. They work, and they work hard. And if anyone refuses to do their fair share, they are asked to leave. Everyone has a purpose here. It's a mutually beneficial arrangement." Love. Love was what she felt, what she'd always feel. Love for a perfectly imperfect man who had never apologized for who he was, ruthless ambition and all. Love for a man who had done something truly special,
who had taken it upon himself to make a tiny corner of the world a better place. She had told him once that she wanted to change the world just a little bit at a time. August Faulkner had already done that. "How do you know all of this?" Clara asked numbly. "He brought me out here yesterday, asked if I would consider teaching art lessons here once a week, for the children and maybe for any of the women who wanted to try." Rose was watching her. "He asked if I thought you might agree to teach here as well, perhaps a few evenings a week, arithmetic, reading, writing. He said you already know a student here."
"What?"
"A boy named Jonas? And his mother? They moved here from Dover at his urging. He said the boy didn't make a very good hotelier."
Clara pressed a hand to her lips, realizing that it was shaking.
"He never told me about this place."
Rose cocked her head.
"Would it have made a difference in how you felt about him?"
Clara shook her head, the truth inescapable.
"No. I loved him already for who he was."
Rose smiled slightly.
"I know.
This just makes me want to cry."
"I'm all out of aprons, so pace yourself."
Clara laughed and hiccuped at the same time.
"This will make Anne so happy,"
Rose said, as both women watched the children on the rope swing shriek with laughter.
"Yes. What about you?"
Rose asked.
"What about me?" "I want to see you happy, Clara. You deserve it."
Clara looked down at her hands.
"I love him. I've probably loved him since the first day I ever saw him, which sounds absurd, I know. But I don't know where to go from here."
Rose leaned against Clara, linking an arm through hers.
"I doubt he does either. You're both in uncharted territory, and I'm afraid I'm the last person who can offer you any guidance."
"You seem to be doing well so far," Clara sniffed.
"Perhaps.
He's never promised me anything." Rose gave her a long look.
"And what have you promised him?"
Clara looked sightlessly out at the sheets, swaying on the line.
"Nothing."
And there it was. Neither one of them had dared to take a leap of faith. Neither one had dared risk everything. Instead, they had both retreated to what they knew, loyalty to their families, determination to handle whatever needed to be done alone.
"Good God. But you two deserve each other,"
Rose scoffed quietly. She sobered.
"Just don't turn away from him. Don't retreat. Your Duke is not like the others."
"No, he's not." But she'd already turned away. She'd already retreated. She wondered if it was already too late.
Chapter 22.
It was just as well that Clara Haywood had never truly been in love before. Now that she had admitted it freely, now that it had been flushed from the dark, secret corners of her mind, it seemed to gain power with every minute that ticked by. It made logic difficult, and it made her emotions swing wildly between giddiness and terror. It had stolen her appetite and her ability to concentrate on a task for any amount of time. She hadn't gotten much sleep that night, her sister's words and everything she had learned that day rolling through her mind incessantly. When dawn had crept around the edges of her curtains, she hadn't been any closer to knowing what she would say to August Faulkner. But she did know that she would say something.
She would not turn away from this. She would take this leap of faith, and whether or not he would be there to catch her remained to be seen. But she would not harbour any regrets. There would be no excuses. And if the worst happened, if he turned from her, then she would at least have her answer. She would not spend another decade wondering what might have happened. "Step and turn!" The shout and stomp jarred her out of her musings, and she hastily returned her attention to her surroundings. She was in the middle of one of the dance classes that she offered in the fall term at Haverhall. She had 20 young ladies, with a collection of titles that read like a chapter in Debrett's, a London dance master, and a string quartet awaiting its cue, all arranged in Haverhall's small ballroom. The dance master was demonstrating the movements of a French waltz in the centre of the room, counting loudly in time with his steps. Clara turned her attention from the man and surreptitiously studied the girls. Some were watching the dance instructor, their lips moving in time with his count, their bodies swaying involuntarily as they followed his steps. Others were examining their fellow students with varying degrees of superciliousness, distrust, and judgment. Those were the ones whispering behind their hands, the same way they would whisper behind their fans. Clara almost rolled her eyes. Her gaze fell on the young lady standing slightly apart from the group. She was perhaps 16, with jet-black hair and pale blue eyes. She was watching the entire scene with a look of bemused interest, as though she had discovered that she had the finest seat in a theatre. Every once in a while, she would produce a small notebook and the stub of a pencil from somewhere in the fabric of her voluminous skirts and jot something down. She caught Clara watching her and blushed, jamming her notebook back into the folds of her skirts and feigning interest in whatever the dance master was droning on about. Clara smiled. She would be having a conversation with this young lady after class. Any young lady who had seemingly sewn pockets into her gown to conceal writing paraphernalia might just prove to be an excellent candidate for her summer school.
"Miss Haywood?"
The dance master was looking at her expectantly. "I beg your pardon?" Clara said. There were a few giggles.
"I was wondering if you might care to demonstrate what a proper French waltz looks like to your students before they practice."
"Of course." She gave herself a mental shake and stepped forward. The dance master took her hand in his cool one, and she stifled a sigh. Every waltz for the rest of her life would be a disappointment. The dance master held up his hand for the quartet, and there was a general shuffling as it prepared to play. He glanced back in its direction and dropped his hand for it to start. Except it never did. Instead, there was a more pronounced shuffling, some frantic whispering, and then a flurry of giggles.
"Pardon my intrusion, but I believe that this dance belongs to me."
The voice came from just behind her, and Clara froze. The dance master's eyes widened slightly before they narrowed.
"Excuse me, sir. But in case it had escaped your notice, you are interrupting a class. My class."
"My class," Clara corrected him abruptly. She pulled her hand free from the instructor's and turned very slowly to find August standing behind her, his hands clasped behind his back, his intense blue eyes fixed firmly on hers. His hair was a little wind-blown, as if he had just come in from a hard ride, and his clothing was simple and unadorned.
"Miss Haywood, if I may have the honour."
He straightened and held out a hand.
"And keep in mind that I'm not taking no for an answer."
Her eyes flickered over his shoulder to where 20 young women were staring openly.
except one who was scribbling something frantically. She smiled. "You may, Your Grace." The dance master blanched and backed up, nearly tripping over his own feet. They both ignored him. Clara placed her hand in August's, and the warmth of his touch instantly sent heat skating across her skin and down her spine. She placed another hand on his shoulder, and he slid his over her waist to rest at the small of her back. "You're going to scandalize my students," she murmured. She could feel her pulse pounding through her veins. "We scandalized everyone the first time we did this 10 years ago. Why stop now?" he replied, pulling her closer than was proper. The quartet, which had hesitated, now started playing, and the first strains of music drifted through the air. August led her in the first steps of a dance that was so familiar, yet so breathtakingly new. She followed where he led, never breaking stride, never breaking eye contact, their surroundings blurred and then faded altogether. "I'm sorry, Clara," he whispered as they floated across the floor. "It was never my intention to hurt you." "I know. I am sorry too," she said.
"For what? You did nothing."
"Exactly. I did nothing. I didn't trust you. I didn't ask you for help when I could have. I shut you out and tried to do everything by myself. And then, worse, standing in your library yesterday, I essentially demanded that you apologize for who you were. Something that I once accused you of doing to Anne, and for me to do it to you was unforgivable."
"I forgive you."
He tightened his hand on hers.
"You're in an impossible position."
"Not impossible. Just hard." He was shaking his head.
"It wasn't fair.
Life isn't fair," she whispered, moving her hand from his shoulder to touch his cheek. "You know that, better than anyone." She paused as they turned, the music thrumming through her. "It's made us who and what we are, and I don't want anyone other than the man who stands before me now. I've never wanted anyone but you."
"Good," he whispered, "because I'm not going anywhere."
"Don't ever change." His lips twitched.
"There might be room for a little improvement, here and there."
Clara smiled. "I saw your gift to Anne," she said softly. She felt August nearly miss a step. He danced on in silence for long seconds before he spoke again.
"I hated what she was exposed to in Marshalsea," August mumbled. "The filth. The disease. The hopelessness. That's a hard thing to come back from."
"Yes," she whispered.
"Brookside is not a hotel exactly, but I think Anne will do an incredible job. Especially..."
"Especially because she understands."
"Yes. Did I do the right thing?"
he asked in a voice so low she barely heard him. Clara tried to find words but failed utterly. She saw his jaw tighten.
"You don't think I..."
Clara pressed her fingers over his lips. "You've done a beautiful thing," she whispered. He gazed down at her, his hand coming up to wipe from her cheek a tear she hadn't even been aware she'd shed.
"Thank you,"
he murmured.
"But don't cry."
"I'm not crying. I'm just warming you up for Anne's reaction," she sniffled, her hand dropping to his chest. August laughed, and she felt the vibrations through his chest where her hand rested.
"I'll consider myself warned."
He paused.
"Rose told you about Brookside?"
Yes, Clara smiled. Don't look so surprised.
I didn't think your sister held me in very high regard.
Then you think wrong. Besides, Rose insists she could never hate a man her sister is desperately in love with.
August abruptly stopped dancing, and Clara stumbled into him.
That was not very well done, Your Grace. She never finished what she was going to say, because his lips were on hers in the softest, most gentle kiss. She melted into him, not caring who was watching, not caring if she scandalized the daughters of half the peerage or all of London. He pulled back, a peculiar expression on his face.
August, she whispered.
At some point the quartet had ceased playing, and there was only silence all around them. He reached into his coat pocket and pulled out what looked like a delicate piece of ribbon tied in a small circle. He grasped her hand and looked down at her, his chest rising and falling rapidly.
I should have done this 10 years ago, too, he said.
Done what? He touched her face.
Danced with you, discovered what you think of Lapiths, spied on you from behind stone fences, learned a thing or two about purpose, fallen in love with you.
Clara tried to speak, but her throat had closed up. August dropped to one knee and looked up at her.
You asked me once when enough is enough. You are my enough. You are my everything.
August drew her hand into his and slid the tiny ribbon over her ring finger.
I love you, Clara.
She looked down at the ribbon and touched it with her other hand in confusion.
This ribbon was tied around a deed to a parcel of land. This land has a small cottage in the back that someone told me is being used as an art studio. A pond that doesn't seem to have any fish in it, some gardens that are rather pretty in summer, and a building that is currently being used as a school.
He tipped her chin up and found her eyes, the love that was coursing through her reflected in his own gaze.
I thought that it, more than pretty jewels or a flashy horse or a fine house, might make a good wedding present.
Clara made an inarticulate noise and dropped to her knees in front of him.
Yes, she whispered. It would.
Is that an answer?
He asked.
Was that a question?
Marry me. Or don't. But promise me you'll never dance with anyone besides me for the rest of your life.
I like the first option, she whispered again. And the third.
He leaned forward and kissed her, and this time she became aware of a smattering of sniffles and applause. August got to his feet and pulled her up with him.
I think we've properly scandalized your students.
I hope so.
She laid her head on his shoulder.
I love you, August, she whispered.
And I you.
This was a terrible waltz, by the way. All that crying and talking and stopping.
And kissing.
And kissing, she agreed, joy and love making it hard to speak. She felt more than saw August signal the quartet, and within seconds music once again filled the air.
I'll make it up to you, he said, pulling her tightly against him. Because I plan on dancing many, many more waltzes with my wife.
This has been a Hachette Audio production of A Duke in the Night, written by Kelly Bowen, read by Ashford McNab, produced by Elise Green, directed by Charles McCrory, recorded by Hachette Studios, post-production by Nikki Banks. A Duke in the Night is also available in print and digital formats from Forever, an imprint of Grand Central Publishing, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2018 by Kelly Bowen. Audio production copyright 2018, Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this book without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the book other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales, is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.